Listening Dog Media.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
He's one of England's most capped international players.
Seaman is the man here.
He's one of the world's most decorated goalkeepers.
And it's somehow kept out by Seaman. That is a fantastic save.
This is Seaman Says with David Seaman.
And Seaman, what a magnificent save.
Hear him.
Breathtaking.
Like never before.
Hello and welcome back to Seaman Says with me, David Seaman. Today we're joined by mega goal scorer, mega Duracell man, and mega Arsenal legend, Mr. Ian Wright.
Seaman's Legends of the Game.
Yes, Wrighty, I've got you on Seaman Says. I'm well happy.
I've been meaning to come on, goalie, for ages, but it's just ridiculous how things just try to do it this time and something comes in, it's just ridiculous.
Now, you're a very busy man, mate. What have you been up to?
I just finished doing this game show I'm doing on ITV, so that was really quite intense. Money's been won, money's been lost. And then you're just doing the football, doing the women's football, and then just up and down from Manchester doing the match of the day. And then there's stuff that you do with the brand stuff. So it's just, you don't realise it. It just kind of runs away from you. You fall from one thing to another thing to another thing. But I'd rather be busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm not busy, it's going to be problems for someone.
Oh, yeah, I remember all that. I remember pre-season when you used to be like absolutely shattered and you'd be as lively as anything. And we'd be like, Wrighty, shut the up.
It's really weird because then I'd go into the bedroom and literally crash. Like a child.
What was I going
to
say then?
Yeah. Literally crash. Yeah, that's what I do. But the pre-season, I'd look forward to it so much because as much as you spend time with the family, whether you're with England or not, you get the little time with the family. As soon as you're with the family, and I love being with them in the break, but as soon as you're with them for like a week, couple of weeks and that, you literally start thinking about the lads, well, I did, and being back with them. And then I used to like the pre-season just trying to get fit, being with the guys, we're all back together, getting ready. It used to be the best part for me. It's what I miss more than anything else, is the camaraderie and the pre-seasons.
Yeah, no, it was good fun. What I always ask, right, who do you actually support?
As a team?
Yeah.
Arsenal. And the thing with, people don't understand it, and it's still even with Crystal Palace fans, I love Palace. And the thing is, with Palace, I love the generation of Palace fans that knew me and knew what Palace meant to me. And it's something that I tried to clear up, but there's a generation of them that are not interested. It's simply because I think I went on to have the success that I had at Arsenal. Never ever asked to leave Palace. They sold me. But they don't understand that my support for Arsenal started when David Rowcastle went there off of our estate, when he went there for 15, 16. Yeah. And we all supported David Rowcastle from early 80s. And then obviously once he started breaking through, everybody on the estate supported Arsenal, everyone. So then the first game I went to was Millwall because David actually supported Crystal Palace, so it was really weird. But the first team I saw was Millwall. So I've got an affinity with them, but obviously I don't support them.
Yeah.
Like it was the first team I ever saw. I must have been nine the first time. And then I started to go there from about 11 to 13, 14. So I've got that kind of affinity with them simply because it's the first place I ever saw a game. Obviously, I've got nothing but love for Palace and people like Steve Parrish and those Palace fans that remembered me for the times, successful times, because if I'm going to be totally honest, when I got to Palace in 85, they went on an upward trajectory. So it was only success we had at Palace, if I'm going to be totally honest. Never asked to move. Love Steve Coppell, obviously. Steve Coppell was amazing, gave me the opportunity to run Nodes, and those Palace fans who supported me. But now, I think they're just a little bit put out by the fact that I'm constantly on about Arsenal, and they know that I love Arsenal, and they just get quite jealous about that.
Do they? Yeah, that's weird, because obviously I've always been a Leeds fan,
Yeah.
And, you know, and that goes back to, you know, actually starting my career there. And then I got released by them at 19.
Yeah.
And people say to me, they say, well, what about when you used to play against Leeds? And I was like, yeah, I wanted to prove them wrong.
Yeah, you do. You do. And the thing is that what happened with me, with Palace fans, because someone daubed like Judas on my mum's house I left. Yeah, so we had to get that taken off. My mum was devastated, an elderly West Indian woman with her son being called Judas. And I didn't even ask to leave. And so from then on, I made sure that, I think even when we lost against Palace, I scored. I made sure I scored every single time I played against them.
I bet you didn't celebrate much, did you?
Well, to be honest, it was. Yeah, I think I actually kissed the badge. I think that's what got them. I was desperate to do it. And I think they blamed me. They blamed me for them going down because I think I scored a goal. And Palace went down. I think they blamed me. So it was just, it's very easy to blame me at the time when Palace went down and I scored and that. And so it just kind of galvanised the haters because they saw me going on to do what we was doing at Arsenal. And so what I'd done at Arsenal, it was something that, like I say, to a certain generation, they just can't deal with it. And that's their problem. It's not mine. I don't give a fuck.
What's your favourite game for Arsenal?
Favourite game, I think it might have been, let me see, the favourite game, this is the time, which one was it? I would probably say the second game in the FA Cup final in the evening at Wembley against Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of the atmosphere and I'd say just the occasion, really. And we drew on the Saturday, and we had to play them again. And it's just because the FA Cup's the world to me. I love it. I love it more than anything. And you know, to play in it, and already lost against Man United for Palace in it. And it's the one medal that, if I could have had one medal in my whole career, if I'm going to be totally honest, it would have been winning the FA Cup for Palace in that time, because we had a team that deserved something. You know, we finished third when we came up in the first division the first time, but we couldn't get into Europe because of all the problems we had in Europe. So I would have loved to have won the FA Cup with Palace, just to cement that my era there. So that was quite a big disappointment. Then to win it at Wembley and
at
score
the old Wembley as well.
At the old Wembley, the proper Wembley, and score on the Saturday and then score again on the Thursday. My brother made a shitload of money because he put me for the first goal scorer on the Saturday, first goal scorer on the Thursday. So he was happy. But like, it was a night time at Wembley, and then the crowd went crazy. And obviously Andy Linegan scored the dramatic winner right at the death. And it was just, the occasion was everything I dreamt of when I was a kid.
I remember the first game when you scored in the first final. And there's that picture of you like running away and celebrating. Yeah. And you've got that like black
vein.
You've got a black thing on your neck, and your veins were like popped right out.
Because I thought I was going to cry then. It's really, because when I was running away, my face was contorted with so much emotion. And ecstasy that I was almost thinking, so I can't believe it. I was getting ready to cry. Then Ray Parler and John Jensen came over. I'm not sure. But like, it was just a kind of it's relief.
Yeah.
Because I think what people don't understand when you're playing in games, those big games like that, is, and people expect you to score. So you're thinking about, you know, making sure you don't miss the chance. And it was the kind of chance, especially the first game, where it came out, Davo took the free kick, Andy Linegan headed it across, and I headed it back across Chris Woods. And then the second game was more difficult, simply because the ball went up to Alan Smith, and it's brilliant. Al just flicked it inside, and I had to run from the halfway line. And so it was one of those things where you have to get that right, because I think Carlton Palmer and the defender, is the guy who's turned from a defender to a forward, scored a lot of goals from, I can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
Remember the guy.
Yeah.
But like, they were chasing me, but I weren't thinking about it. But all I was thinking about, oh my God, you know what I mean? I'm coming up against Chris Woods, and I finished it. And it's only afterwards when I finished, I realised, well, I was under pressure to finish that. But you don't think about that while you're doing it. And so to then get the FA Cup winner's medal was just, it meant the world to me because I went to Arsenal to win stuff and we're getting in finals. Yeah. And, you know, we won them.
Well, that was Cup double year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Beat them in the League Cup as well, which was really cool. You know, two cups.
I'm not very welcome in Sheffield.
but it's good. It's good. It's good. You don't want to be like, it's like Sheffield Wednesday fans. Even the lady works with me now, Laura. She's a massive Sheffield Wednesday fan. She mentions it all the time. She said, "Yeah, you got to get over that." That was a pleasure. That wasn't even business. That was pleasure.
Yeah. Just bring in your two medals, mate, and show her.
That's what I always say. You know what I mean? It's like you meet fans now, and you know they say, "Oh man, can't believe you scored goals again." And I said, "Listen." People think, you know, you're playing professionally, and they said, "Yeah, we know it was your job," and you know, just I said, "No. I enjoyed scoring against you.
Yeah.
It was pleasure. It wasn't business. I love the fact that you could see people sitting in their seats still at the end of games when they've just lost, and you've just gone to see your away fans, and then you walk down the side, especially somewhere like Tottenham, and you can see them giving you stick, and you can see kids really sad and parents to their dads and that, like, and then you look over at them, and then you look over at them, and they're like, and then the dads try to give you a stick, and you just laugh at them. Like, that time, you miss that kind of stuff. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, I loved when we were away from home, and like, you know, you score, and then you score again, so they start leaving. And like you go and get the ball for a throw on, and then they give you a stick, and you say, and you just turn around to them, and you guys, "You lot still here? What are you still doing?" It's going to... And then they jump up, go, and they go, "Ah, ah." Yeah. And then you go, "What are you still doing here? This is over. This game's over." You know?
Wow.
You know, so it was those things, if I'm being totally honest, Goldie, is what I miss more than anything. That's why I love watching someone like Jamie Vardy gives some pure shit assery. And it's really good to see, because not a lot of people are doing stuff like that now. Everybody's too nice. It's too PC, the game.
Right, I'm going to put you on the spot here, right?
Go on, then.
You've got one choice.
Mm.
Bergkamp or Henry?
Bergkamp for me.
Yeah, I knew you'd say
you know,
that.
It's unfortunate that I left the year, I think Thierry came the year when I left. So it was one of those where Arsene had Nicholas ready to go, and then he brought Thierry in. So my time was short anyway. I didn't get to play with Thierry, unfortunately, because that would have been amazing. But like playing with Dennis took everything somewhere else for me. We went through those fallow years, and then when Arsene came, you know what I mean, we went through those years where we were cup team. We were, you know, obviously the Cup Winners' Cup, which was really brilliant at the time. You get into them kind of finals and that. But we weren't nowhere near the league. And when Dennis came, and when Patrick came, and when Platy came, you know what I mean, Overmars, Manny Petit, then you look at the team at pre-season and you think, yeah, this team's ready to go. And Dennis took our levels to another place when he got there. He's in training, everything, what he done, shared rooms with him. He was professional all the, like, every single minute of the day. So it's very easy to say Dennis, you know,
Tell us about the way that you met him when you realised that he was coming to the club.
Oh my gosh, the petrol station. It was really strange, Goldie, because Dennis obviously went to sign, and at the time, obviously, we didn't know he wasn't a flyer. I mean, we just heard it.
Yeah.
Non-flying Dutchman, they called him. And I remember I was coming back. I can't remember where I was coming back from, but I was at Clackett Lane service station on the M25, and like there was a big, like, 7 Series BMW parked on the wrong side of the pump. So I was like, when I came in, you kind of noticed it. And so, you know what I mean, came in, I think I went in.
Oh.
Hold on.
Hang on, righty.
Your volume's gone.
No. Is it a cable that's come loose or something? There we go.
Cable come loose.
Right? There we go.
There you go.
Am I back? Yeah, there it is. Look, myself.
You were just talking about where you were parking.
Yeah. So I come into the petrol station, and there's a 7 Series BMW, and it's parked on the wrong side of the pump. So I've kind of got in front of it, and as I got in front of it, it's kind of looked in the petrol station, and Dennis Bergkamp was walking out of the petrol station, and I came out of the car and I screamed. I said, "Oh my God, Dennis!" And then he said, "Hey, Ian, how are you?" And he said, "Oh my God!" I said, "You know me?" And then we kind of went through Faze off. Oh my God. So, I said, so it's done, you signed? He said, yeah. Yeah, I just signed it. I saw his missus went in the car, saw Henrietta and that, and you know what I mean? Obviously, we're all very close now. So I saw Henrietta, gave her a hug and everything. I was so excited. It was like, literally, that changed my life, really. Because knowing that I'm going into that that pre-season with Dennis, I think we went to Norway that year as well, Goalie. Yeah. I think we went to Norway. Was that the year I done the bungee jump? I don't know if that was the year.
That's another story.
Yeah, I don't think that might have been the year. No, because Anders was still there when I done the bungee jump, so that couldn't have been it. But like, we were going to Norway. But when I left that petrol station, my demeanour totally changed, because I know now that we've got somebody who's serious. There's a serious footballer. 7 million he cost has come to the club, and that's only going to benefit me. Yeah. So it's really, honestly, I was so excited. I couldn't wait. It was like going to your first big school, like the first year in big school. It was to go and play with him, and he didn't disappoint, to be honest.
Yeah, no, he was special, you know. I played with Thierry quite a bit, and I'm on the Thierry side, you know, because I just felt that he affected the game in more areas. You know, he could pick the ball up outside the box and just, you know, go the whole length of the pitch and that.
When you watched him, goalie, he literally could have 5 minutes in a game. And the thing with Thierry, he was very consistent. He wasn't somebody that, oh, Thierry's not playing well today. He always played well, and he'd have a 5 minute spell in the game where he does stuff that you just think that's orgasmic stuff. And he's somebody that could, for me, is easily in the running for one of the best players that's ever played in the Premier League.
Yeah, definitely. And when I used to watch him, I used to hope that the defenders would like kick him or something, because as soon as you wound him up, that was it. It was like, good night.
Yeah.
He's like going to get Tottenham, you. He's going to do like
when the Tottenham fans, when somebody told me, I remember Thierry tells a story about when the Tottenham fan, when they said, listen, if you win today, when we won the league there, if you win today, no celebrating, simply because, you know, the trouble it could cause and the fight. And like Thierry said, yeah, that's fine and that. And then when they scored, they went absolutely loopy. They went crazy. So Thierry kind of said, oh, okay, you celebrate. Okay. And then he said, right, then that's it. We will celebrate. And he's right. He was right. And I really like that. I really love that fact, because I don't think people realize how dangerous that situation would have been or could have been, you know, because you're going to win the league at White Hart Lane. That's something that the Tottenham fans... You know, it's not the first time neither. You know what I mean? We've done it there before in the 70s. No. You know what I mean? So that's something that they've got to live with. So that could have been really quite volatile. So for them to... So they wound Thierry up. They should have told the Tottenham fans, listen, if we score, let's just hold it down. So, so as we don't... Let's not upset them.
How's the golf?
To be honest, Goldie, I'm putting pretty poorly at the minute. No. I've got... Yeah, I'm putting really badly. I went to the Grove the other day, and as well as I was doing actually hitting the ball, my man Tony's got me going out and up. You know, I get on the green, and I haven't got yips or anything. I'm just like, it's just fucking going off in my hand. I'm hitting it like, you know, I'll be like 8 feet off and I can hit it another 8 feet past. And I'm thinking, what's going on? What's happened? You know what I mean? So it's funny because I'm going to play with Tony tomorrow, because it's the only thing now in my life that upsets me to the point where, like when we used to play, you know, it affect me for 3 or 4 days, because then you need the next game to come quickly, especially if you played poorly. You want the next game to come quickly so you could score that goal, or you could play well so you can forget what's happening. And with golf, you'll do that, then you'll hit a brilliant shot, and then you go on the putting green and miss like a 4-footer, and like that's what you're thinking about when you finish, when you're driving home, and it bothers me for a few days. I literally have to phone my wife up to Nancy to say, because she says, if you're gonna go and start getting angry, then you could have stayed with us. And I said, okay, not that I don't want to stay with you, but like, if you're gonna go to golf, and what it made me realize, if I'm gonna go to golf, then I've got to enjoy it. Otherwise, it could have been time I spent with the family. So now I don't get as angry about it, but it does still play on my mind for a while when I play poor golf.
That's why I started fishing, you know, because I would walk off the golf course more frustrated than I'd walked on it, because I played shit. And I was like, that's defeating the object. I'm trying to relax here. So then I started with fishing, and then that was it. You know.
But that's the thing, Goalie. I've never done fishing with you. I love watching the fish you catch and that, but I just can't see myself fishing. You know what I mean? Especially back in the day, telling my missus, yeah, I'm going midnight fishing. She'd say, yeah, fucking right. Yeah. Yeah. Midnight fishing.
Yeah. I had to say that a few other lads were with me actually.
go midnight fishing.
Yeah.
But the thing, it's something that I've done. I just can't, excuse me. It's just something. My concentration, Goalie, I can't do it. If I'm not catching something within the first 5 minutes, that's it. I'm off.
I can't imagine you being there long. You know,
no.
People can't imagine Gazza like when I used to go with him. But you know, to be fair, he's
he needed it though, didn't he?
Yeah, oh, he did.
He's a very good fisherman.
He's
like
all
your
right,
both
actually.
Are.
Yeah, but because you know what Gazza's like, he'd cast his fly out and it'll be in the water like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's rubbish. Change it. I swear to you, he would spend more time tying his flies on than he actually would be fishing.
Than he fishing.
Yeah.
If I'm going to fish, I'd probably want to fish with yourself and Gazza, because that's two extremes in respect of characters. But Gazza, fishing with Gazza would probably be really funny.
Yeah.
It'd really be funny. So that's something, but it's something that when we were younger, we didn't get the opportunity to do. Obviously, where you grew up, where Gazza grew up, there's opportunities to go somewhere and go fishing and that. But where we grew up, there weren't too many lazy fishing places for us to fish. But like, there were some people who'd go, they'd go away with their families and they'd go fishing. But like, it was something that I never got the opportunity to actually do. But if I did do it, I'd want to have those things on, Goalie, where it comes all up to your chest and you're actually in the water.
The waders.
That's quite, yeah.
Yeah.
That seems really strange.
I remember you saying that once, saying something about, if we're going, I want to wear all the gear.
Every single thing.
Yeah.
Everything. I want the ones, because I saw somebody in there, they're actually in the water, and the way, so that the water's up to like there or wherever it is, but they've got rubber stuff. What's up to here?
Yeah.
And you could just walk in the water. If I fell over, though, I'd be
oh no, good night.
Could you fall over? Can you fall over in that?
Yeah.
Can the current push you over? Well, yeah, I wouldn't do that then.
You can slip and then it unbalances you and then you're off.
Oh, mate, I'd hate to do that. But I've watched that and I said, wow, I wouldn't mind doing that. But other than that, nah, Goalie, fishing's not for me.
So what have you been watching? Well, of course you've been watching the league. What's your prediction for?
Well, I tell you what, I fancied at the start of the season I said Chelsea.
Yeah.
And I still fancy Chelsea, although they've got injuries now to Lukaku and Werner. As much as people say Werner's injury, don't score enough. But the fact is that Werner gives Chelsea so much and then Lukaku scores the goals. But I still fancy Chelsea, but Liverpool are now getting themselves into a run of form that you're going to find very difficult for them. Now they'll just slip back into what they done when they dominated. City, it's going to be City and Liverpool and Chelsea for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, like with the fourth, it's going to be, I'm probably going to go now. I still feel like it's out of Liverpool, Chelsea, City, and then I don't know who's going to be finishing fourth. I mean, I'd love West Ham to stay there.
Yeah, well, Callum's a bit sensitive at the moment because he's Man United fan.
But the thing is that we saw what happened with Man United the other day, and as much as you know, I said a year ago that I'm just finding it very difficult to see what the tactics are, because I speak to somebody even on the podcast, my own podcast, Goalie, where I was saying with George Graham when I first got there, we done so much work on pressing and defending from the front, that is not something you can do in a few days or stuff like that. That is something you have to work on continually. That's why, to the point where I was thinking, Jesus Christ, I've come to Arsenal, all I'm doing is defending. And it was a thing where it was muscle memory then, because when you watch a Man United, or you watch a team that do press well, you see, well, they're putting the work in. When you watch a team that's not pressing well, you can see, well, they're not working on it. And it's blatantly obvious to see, and this is why all pundits can see that it's very easy to break through them, because they're going in ones. yeah. going in ones, and then the other person say, "Oh shit, I better go." By the time he got, it's too late.
Yeah, just gets passed through him, doesn't it?
Yeah, passed through him, and this is why the first goal against Liverpool, it's exactly that. So you've got, I think Ronaldo might have went, Greenwood half went to cut off Robertson down the line. Then or somebody. Then Wan-Bissaka's like, oh, I better go in.
Yeah.
He was too late. And then what's happened with McTominay is that McTominay's inside and he's kind of come over too far. So they pass straight past him. Mo Salah's literally got a one-on-one with Luke Shaw. Yeah. And then Naby Keita, who hasn't been tracked, comes in and scores the goal. And when you look at it, like, you think to yourself, no way are you meant to go through a team that easy. It was so easy simply because they're not working on closing down. And you cannot go into a game and say, we are going to go on the front foot against Liverpool with no structure, with no structure, Goldie. So this is what I said on Match of the Day. And if you're going to do that, Liverpool don't even have to play well to beat you.
Yeah.
Because they just do their normal stuff, which they do, which is close down from the front, stop you playing, close you down, get bodies back. Like the pivot what they had, which was Naby Keita and Henderson, were so tight to the defence that they were blocking stuff, and then they were straight into Man United when they won it. So there's a lot of work to be done at Man United. And it's the same as what happened with Chelsea, with Frank.
Yeah.
Frank took them to a certain place in respect of them not having no monies to sign people. They had the embargo. So a top manager's thinking, I don't want Chelsea. If I can go to Chelsea and I can't buy players. So Frank he bridged that gap. And I think that Ole bridged it to a certain point. And now what we're seeing is, you know, we're seeing like now where he has to impress upon his team. And then you've got a challenge, Guardiola, Tuchel and Klopp.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just have to...
Is Ole the man for the job?
But the thing about it is, Ole has got the job. And that's it. As long as Man United think, then if he's... That's all that matters is Man United think he's the man for the job. The fact is that he's got to do more stuff in respect of them winning games by impressing themselves upon the opposition. Because
you talk about the style and you talk about, you know, they're not pressing as a team. But is there a weakness in the park somewhere? Because for me, looking at it, it's probably McTominay. To a certain extent, Fred, McTominay sort of sits quite deep. And his role as a youngster was further up the pitch.
Yeah.
And he's
McTominay's a box-to-box player. And he's the thing is that...
But he seems to be better going forward than he is coming back and defending.
Yeah, but then it comes down to the manager to get the best out of McTominay, like he should be getting the best out of the best assister in the Premier League at the moment with Pogba. It wouldn't have mattered who you had in the midfield against Liverpool with the way you were playing, the way that the team was set up to go on the front foot against Liverpool, because if you do that against Liverpool and you're not structured, they're going to do exactly what they've done. So it wouldn't make no difference if McTominay was a box-to-box player and he was going forward doing what he's doing, because they're so open at the back. And they haven't got that specialist player to play that position, and they're not working on closing down. So I don't know how Man United were going to beat Liverpool, and you've got Man City coming soon, who pass you to death, pass it. So Man United for me are a counter-attacking team, and if that means they have to stay on the back foot at home and stay deep, and then beat people on the counter-attack, that's what they should be trying to do.
But that's it.
That's where their strength is. That's where their strengths are, goalie.
Getting the best out of your team or your squad, like what you said with George Graham.
Exactly. That's what we did.
Yeah.
You know, you look at it, you know, Rashford, great pace. Greenwood, unbelievable. Ronaldo will score. So if that's the case and you're a counter-attacking side, then maybe a counter-attacking style is better for Man United at the minute.
Yeah. No, totally agree.
I just want to ask you sort of more of a behind-the-scenes things on Match of the Day, because I think that's really fascinating. Because obviously, as a pundit there, like what's your day like with that? When you break down the matches of Saturday, the Sunday, and you're talking to the show producers, how much is that is you or Shearer, or how much are you picking the bits that you want
to... Absolutely. We have to, because when you see us at Match of the Day and you see lines and you see this and that, what happens is that the researchers and the guys in there, brilliant, they're magnificent. Them, the guys at ITV, the guys at the Premier League, we're talking about proper experts. So when you're talking to them, you talk to them and say, listen, I saw what they'd done there. Like if you was going to do the Man United, break that down and the closing down, you'd say to them, listen, can you put a line on how Ronaldo went in, how Greenwood didn't go across, and then you spit, and then they say, what about this one over there? And then you talk it through. And that's what me and Shearer do.
Dialogue with them.
Yeah, so it's dialogue with them, it's dialogue with Alan Shearer. So we'll be watching one telly there, whichever you're doing, and then I might see something on Al's and say, oh my gosh, Al's, did you see that, what they've done? So then you say, at 15:27, bam, you log that number, and then you go and you tell them about that. And then the same with like me and Michael the other day. You say, Michael, did you see that bit? And then he says, yeah, did you see that bit of defending? So me and Al will say, did you see that bit of striking stuff? Did you see what the midfielder should have done there? He should have went across. And so then all through the day, depending, because it's a long day.
Yeah, I was going to say, when do you rock up and you get when, there, when does that you day get start there for, something like that?
Well, you get there, depending on the early game, you know, you have to be at the studios by 11:30, 11:45, and then you're there till 12 at night. And people say, well, you're watching, which is not... It's not a bad thing, honestly. It's amazing.
Yeah, but it's,
I mean, because I have such a laugh. You have a laugh with Shearer. You have a laugh with Lineker. It's so funny. You know, Mike, it's really funny with the guys when you get in there. And then all you're hoping for is a good game. Like, obviously, Sunday, we got so much to talk about to the point where it was almost like, oh, my God, where do you start? And that's when it's really great fun because you get to do some, everybody, me, Micah, the researchers, the guys behind the scenes, we get to really dissect something and give people proper insight on why that's happening. And so it's behind us. And then there's a lot of banter and a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, which is really good because we're in this little room and it's just fun. It's really good fun. And
you can't fake that sort of chemistry, can you?
No, and that's why sometimes, especially when you get on, it kind of runs over into the show because we've been having certain things that's been happening in the day and you kind of bring it into the show. But like, you know, it's something that it meant the world to me to like be a guest on it and now to be a pundit on it because it's the thing I watched more when I was a kid.
It's, like, it's got heritage in itself, the program. It's,
and so to be part of it, it's honestly, I love it. It's amazing.
And also, is there a bias towards putting the bigger teams on first purely because they have a bigger fan base? Is that fair to say?
No,
or is
it's
it
not
just
fair
based
to say.
On how good the football match is?
No, it's not. No, that's not fair to say at all. That's a horrible thing to say, in fact, because because what happens is,
look,
is
I'm
that,
a Saints fan, and we're always on last. So
well, the thing about
fine.
It is, well, it all comes down to who the best game, the best
it is
game.
Just down to the game.
It literally comes down to the best game. And that's why we have such a laugh when it's time to choose it. I don't know why. That's all of a sudden that's happened where he says what team's coming on first. But in the main, Liverpool, Man City and Man United, you know, if they're winning, they're up the ladder more. But if you get Leicester and a Burnley and it's a brilliant game, you know, goals will lead on match of the day.
They'll put you up the pecking
order. That's what will happen. Goals will lead. So if you're scoring goals, you'll probably be on further up the pecking order. Now, an unbelievable 0-0 draw is never going to be in front of any kind of goals. Never going to happen.
We'd have never got on us, would we? 1-0 to the 1-0. Arsenal. It would be last every time.
Yeah, but I'd be happy with that because at least I'd have scored the goal. So I don't care. Yeah,
and then giving it one of them, righty. Yeah. With a trophy.
Can I just ask one more question? I'm just obviously being a... like massive goal scorer yourself. I'm just interested to get your opinion on the current goal scorers in the league and who you think is top dog.
Mo Salah's the top dog. I'm always going to love what Jamie Vardy does. Harry Kane will get his chances once they sort themselves out in respect of creation. But like for me at the moment, there's not you can't look further than Mo Salah. Salah is the best player in the world at the moment for me.
Even when he miscontrols it, he still gets a great finish on it,
so
doesn't
quick.
He?
Yeah, he's back to that form. He's back to that form when he first got here, where everything he was touching was turning to gold. And at the moment, you saw what he'd done the other day. Like that, for me, Goldie, the second goal where he put it into the near post bit of David De Gea, on the left foot.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's the kind of thing where I'm probably going across goal for that.
Yeah,
you know, I'm probably going across goal. But he's in such scintillating form. When you watch it in slow motion, they show it behind the goal. He's literally squeezed that in, the hardest part of the finish. It's coming across him on his left foot. The natural thing to do is back where it's come from to the far post, and he's gone to the near post. Yeah. It's an unbelievable finish. And you know what else I've got to mention in that game? Jordan Henderson done a pass for his third goal with the outside of his right foot, which was like, it was sublime. Didn't get enough love, nowhere near enough love. And that is the that is a worry for anyone watching Liverpool, because those players are now playing with ultimate confidence, and that's got to be a worry to anyone.
Yeah, I think that the was it Salah's third goal where he took control. Yeah,
remember, Goldie, he had one touch that you think goalie should have come, but he just nipped in. He's so quick, he's so sharp.
That's what I mean. He's like, even like when it looks like he's over miscontrolled, he's overcooked, he's still getting a little nick on it and finishing.
That was the thing.
Really,
but Goldie, that was the thing. What I always say to people, what you say to me when you're running through the goalie, you're waiting for. I need him to have a bad touch because I'm. It's like we're playing chicken here. He has to have a bad touch for me to go and close him down, and that and. Even like I spoke about the FA Cup with the one with Chris Woods when I ran from the halfway line, I had a bad touch in that, but Chris Woods came and stopped. And it's the same thing what I think that David De Gea, he had that touch where he had to rush and then he dinked it over him. Yeah. That was David De Gea's chance to go and smother him, and he didn't do it. And you've got to do it with players like him because you've got to see the opportunity to go in and close down the angle, and he didn't see it.
Yeah, brilliant,
nice
mate,
one.
It's been amazing.
Goldie, thanks for having me on. Thanks for having me on. That's it. It's done.
Yes, I love it.
You got the best. No worries, man. Goldie, I'll see you soon.
I'll see you on the green.
No, yes, you will.
Four
hopefully putting. I'm putting better. Yeah, fuck off, Goldie. Don't even put that in my ear. Jesus Christ. Right, I'll see you later.
Take care, mate.
See you later.
This is a Listening Dog Media production.
Podcast Network.